A federal court rules the Trump administration cannot cut the food stamp program as it intended during a pandemic economic collapse. I'm David Brancaccio. A federal judge in Washington, D.C. has blocked a plan by the Trump administration to end food stamps for nearly 700,000 unemployed people. Let's bring in Marketplace's Erica Barris with more on this proposed change.
This rule, announced back in December, would have required more food stamp recipients to work to get benefits by limiting states' ability to waive existing work mandates. It was supposed to take effect in the spring, but it was blocked in mid-March by Chief Judge Beryl Howell. That month, Congress suspended work mandates as part of the coronavirus relief package. The Agriculture Department appealed the judge's earlier order, and the rule was still scheduled to take place. But yesterday, that same judge wrote that it's not clear how denying benefits, quote, makes sense.
To what extent is that because we're seeing so many people without enough to eat right now?
Right. We're in a pandemic. Millions of Americans have lost their jobs. As of May, more than 6 million people have signed up for supplemental nutrition assistance benefits, a 17% increase. Judge Howell called the plan by the Agriculture Department arbitrary and capricious.
So what happens next here?
This is one of three Trump administration efforts to overhaul the food stamp program. One looks at how utility expenses are calculated. The other one looks at who qualifies for aid. It could leave 500,000 kids without access to free school meals. The USDA is still working on those.
Erica, thank you. In early trading, the Dow is up 89 points, 0.3%. The S&P 500 is up 0.5%. The NASDAQ index is up 0.7%. The 10-year interest rate remains cheap, although up at 0.79%. Stock prices are buoyed in part by the possibility of a package of pandemic relief. House Speaker Pelosi says tomorrow is really the deadline. On Mondays, we get a reading from economist Julia Coronado at Macro Policy Perspectives. Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I gave up on comprehensive pandemic relief, but House Speaker Pelosi says the deadline is really tomorrow. So maybe I should keep an open mind for another 24 hours.
David, don't be fooled by the noise. Look away. This is just political posturing. At this stage, it is very unlikely we are going to get something legislated before the election, which is unfortunate, but probably true.
All right. And we also have the International Monetary Fund, big meetings, virtual this year. They're very focused on less developed countries and what COVID could do to people and finances.
Yeah. Like every country responded with fiscal support during the COVID shutdowns. The emerging markets are the least able to support that over time. And we may need to talk about debt restructuring for a number of countries at some stage.
Because if these countries can't pay back the debt, you could have a more systemic problem in the financial system as we look ahead.
Exactly. The whole point of fiscal support was to prevent a health crisis from becoming an economic and financial crisis. And of course, for many countries, it is far from over, both from a health perspective and from a financial perspective.
Julia Coronado, economist at Macro Policy Perspectives. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Today's the anniversary of what got labeled the Black Monday stock market crash of 1987. The Dow on that day fell 22.6%. That would be like the Dow today falling 6,500 points. They put in market circuit breakers afterwards to give traders and systems moments to collect themselves during big sell-offs. As it happens this morning, the Euronext stock markets in Paris, Brussels, Amsterdam, Oslo went on the fritz for 3 hours. Here's my Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig.
The problems began an hour into the European session and affected everything from stocks to commodities. Before trading was halted, shares in Paris rose nearly 1%. In the hour since, European shares have lost earlier gains. Euronext said it's investigating the outage, which it blames on an issue with software that allows computer applications to talk to each other. It comes weeks after an October 1st technical glitch halted trading in Tokyo for an entire day. Officials there said a hardware failure caused the worst ever outage for the world's third largest stock exchange.
Victoria Craig in London for us there.
Thank you. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Department store sales remain down more than 7% from a year ago, this despite an upward spike in September. Online commerce sales are up 32% this year, according to a calculation by eMarketer. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more on those physical spaces that we used to visit called shopping malls.
There's been a wave of store chain bankruptcies, JCPenney, Lord & Taylor, J. Crew. So malls are losing their anchor tenants and specialty retailers. Food courts and multiplexes are going dark.
Commercial real estate, specifically retail mall real estate, is in a crisis.
Camille Yanishevsky at CFRA Research says consumers are strapped for cash and afraid to shop in stores. Sales are way down, so...
We've seen a number of retailers not pay rent.
Which makes it harder for mall owners to pay their mortgages. Some struggling malls are trying to reinvent themselves with medical offices, apartments, schools, Amazon fulfillment centers. Yanishevsky says mall landlords can get $20 a square foot for a department store. They can only charge half or less that for a fulfillment center. And says Mark Cohen at Columbia Business School,
if it can't be repurposed, it's likely to eventually die,
leaving an enormous empty shell that could take years to redevelop. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
I know it's a Monday in October, but let's you and I go to the shore, Port Orford, Oregon, for two COVID-free minutes on the business of sea urchins. Kate Kay has the story.
Wobbly blobs that look like grape jelly cling to the sides of seawater-filled tanks on Port Orford's dock. These are purple sea urchins, and this is an urchin ranch. Inside these urchins is uni. It's a sushi delicacy. Derek Foley and his father are the commercial divers who harvested these urchins. The elder Foley started his urchin diving business, Oregon Sea Farms, in 1993. They usually sell urchins straight from the wild. Now, through a project funded by nonprofit Oregon Wildlife Foundation, they're fattening them up on the ranch first. Derek Foley says he can sell them for about $10 each.
They're not going to be cheap, that's for sure.
But culling these urchins could help kickstart kelp recovery. Kelp is essential to Pacific coastal habitats. Sea urchin overpopulation has led to the decline of kelp. Where kelp thrives, its bulbs and long stems are seen floating on the water. But urchins have devoured kelp, leaving behind barren waters, where now even urchins can't find food, says Oregon State University marine biologist Tom Calvanese.
And you immediately can see a big difference between what a kelp forest habitat looks like and what rocky habitat without kelp looks like.
When the urchins reach market size, chefs like Christian Gomez of Port Orford's The Nest Cafe might add the locally ranched uni to sauces and spreads.
It's pretty much like all fat yumminess. It's great.
For Foley, keeping the kelp forest alive is essential to keeping his business alive.
Kelp's the primary, that's the primary food source for urchins.
He says he wants to sell ranched urchins to restaurants around the state. In Oregon, I'm Kate Kay for Marketplace.
Looking to boost international travel, a global airline industry group says it's working on a system so passengers would not have to quarantine necessarily. Marketplace's Nova Safo joins us here. Nova, when can we get this?
Well, that's the tough part, David, because there are a lot of hurdles to overcome first. There's a language barrier issue. Test results have to be understandable across borders. The industry has to be able to do a lot of tests each day. They're looking for a target price of $10 or less per test, and they need the test to be accurate and fast. So that's a tall order. So far, testing in air travel has been scattershot, different things being tried at different airports. But what the industry is aiming for is a common standard and the endorsement of the World Health Organization. Now, initial guidelines could be proposed by the end of this month by a UN agency, but there's a long road ahead, including getting tests that can match those guidelines.
And so airlines getting deeper here into the COVID testing business, clearly present systems aren't meeting their perceived need.
Right, they haven't been. Globally, there are about half as many flights now as there were a year ago. And international flights are worse off than domestic. That's according to the International Air Transport Association. And the hurdles, airlines believe, are the fear of sitting next to an infected passenger and the 14-day mandatory quarantines around the world. One industry survey found 83% of respondents would not travel if there's a quarantine in the arriving country. So testing, perhaps, could limit quarantines and ease fears, David.
All right, Nova, thank you. With legislation going through the British Parliament to break part of the UK's divorce agreement guiding its exit from the European Union, some senior religious figures there are speaking out. The top Anglican bishops of England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland said in a public letter in the Financial Times today that this would be a, quote, disastrous precedent. Among their concerns is that Britain could be headed toward a harder border between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, which could lead to bloodshed 22 years after the Good Friday Peace Accords. I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? Don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.